Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Here's a question for every woman who's ever loved science but didn't pursue it as a career. Simply put, why? Well, Eileen Pollack has wrestled with that question for most of her life, and she tried to find the answer in her new book, The Only Woman in the Room, Why Science is Still a Boys' Club. And she'll be talking about the book tonight at the Harvard Bookstore, but she first joins us here in the Radio Boston studio. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Meghna. I'm really happy to be here.
It's great to have you. I just want to first ask you, the impetus for you writing this book is actually something that lots of people are familiar with, and that's something that former Harvard president Larry Summers said about why, are women just sort of genetically predisposed to not being as good as in science? Why aren't there more women faculty in the sciences? And why did that start you down the road towards writing this book?
Well, I should say first that I actually knew Larry Summers, that I had known him since I was in high school. We didn't go to the same school or move in the same circles, but I was in high school debate, and he was a judge. So I knew Larry, and I actually appreciated that he was bringing up the question in the first place. So people have to understand that most men who were running major research institutions were not asking where all the women physicists on their faculty were. So I was glad he brought it up. And he did, he had been a debater, so he brought up all the possibilities for where were the women. So it was really, he had also brought up maybe there were cultural differences, and but two of them were that possibly there were genetic reasons and possibly women just didn't want to work as hard as the men. And I sat down to write Larry an email to explain to him why I hadn't gone on in physics, even though it was what I really passionately wanted to do. And next thing I knew, I had a 20-page email and realized that what I had was a book.
Yeah.
Or what I wanted to write was a book. And I realized I didn't understand my own reasons, that it had all been so painful to me that when I became a writer, I really just shut that part of it out.
So let's talk about that, right? Because that's the story in part that you tell in the book. Because you have a real profound personal experience here. In 1978, you became one of the first two women to earn a Bachelor of Science degree in physics from Yale.
Right.
So you are a card-carrying scientist in terms of your educational background.
Well, I always felt that because I didn't go on to grad school, that in fact I had fulfilled the prophecy of my high school principal, who wouldn't let me take the advanced science and math courses because, as he said, girls never go on in science and math. So I was ashamed, and I didn't feel as if I were a scientist. I felt as if I had let down the whole female gender by not going on to grad school, rather than saying, look what I did, even though I came into Yale so unprepared because they wouldn't let me take these courses, and look how well I did by the end. I just felt like a miserable
failure.
Summa
cum laude. I mean, you were at the top of your class.
But this is what women do. Okay, so this isn't just me. And of course, it's not all women. But there are studies that show that women are just much harder on themselves than men in general, and that women focus on what they didn't do, or the one problem they got wrong, or that it was an A minus, not an A, and that makes them a failure, right?
Well, I would like to talk specifically about the kinds of things that you experienced while you were, we could focus on what happened before you even got to college, of course, but while you were at Yale, because you kind of go back and do, what you call an autopsy,
right,
of what was then your nascent scientific career. I mean, can you give us one or two examples of what it was like being a physics student, a female physics student then in the mid-1970s?
Well, for one thing, I was just incredibly self-conscious. And, that title, The Only Woman in the Room, it's really if you're the only anything in the room, you often just are so distracted by that, by the sense that you represent an entire gender or race or, nationality, that it's very hard to actually just focus on the work. So that was going on. And of course, I had come in so far behind. I felt far behind even when I was no longer behind. And it's hard for people to imagine just how isolated I was, but I had virtually no contact. Even though I took all my courses with the same 12 guys for 4 years, I couldn't name you more than one or two of those guys, and they don't remember me as even having been in the class. Like, after the book came out, some of them were getting in touch and said, you must have been in my class. I guess there was a woman. But, you know, they all did their problem sets together. They hung out together, and I was completely isolated. Nobody really talked to me. Nobody connected to me. I was doing everything by myself, and that was, I didn't realize at the time how incredibly difficult that was.
Well, and what about support from faculty?
Well, in those days, that's one thing that's gotten better in the sense that now there sometimes are women's science groups where the women undergrads or grad students get together, and maybe there are one or two female faculty members. There were zero female faculty members back then. And most of my physics and math professors were actually great guys. I mean, they were superb teachers. They liked me. I liked them. They were not villains, right? They just didn't get how isolated I felt, how much encouragement I needed. They just didn't understand. I didn't even really understand how much I needed that they really couldn't.
So this encouragement question, I want to ask you a little bit more about that in a second, but there was something which you revealed that just kind of blew my mind, that in the process of writing this book, you went back and talked to people who were connected with the thesis that you wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, first of all, do you remember what your thesis
yes.
was? What was it about?
Well, it was about why waves travel in one way in even dimensions and a completely different way in odd dimensions, such that if we lived in an even dimensional world, we would just be, it wouldn't work. We would just be inundated continually. Nothing would ever pass by you. You would always be in the middle of the sound or the light or whatever, and it just wouldn't work. And, you know, that's so cool. What is it? You know, I remember sitting there and trying to think what it even meant to, like, what's an 11-dimensional space? What's traveling through this, you know?
So I love how much detail you remember what your thesis was about, because you went back and talked to faculty members who had read your thesis in the 70s, and they told you something today that they never told you when you actually submitted
right.
it, which was?
That it was remarkable. I thought, because it took me so long to even understand what the problem was, let alone teach myself all the very complicated math that I had never had to solve the problem, that I must be terrible at it, at math and science. It's one reason I didn't go on. And all these years later, I met with my advisor and I said, well, compared to all the other undergrads who did theses in math, in theoretical physics, how did mine compare? And he just said, oh, undergrads never do projects like this. They just, it's way beyond, you know, what you did was extraordinary.
And you're like, wait a minute.
I just...
40 years later?
I said I didn't know whether to strangle him or kiss him I started to cry, actually.
Of
and
course.
I teared up.
I mean, this gets right to the heart of what you say was missing in the 70s when you
right.
were making some very important decisions about right. what you wanted your career to be.
But this hasn't changed.
I was going to say, is it still missing now?
So it was a real discovery to me to find out that that was still very true, that there was an actual ethos or philosophy in the sciences among most professors, and this included quite a few of the women I spoke to. We don't encourage anyone to go
male
on.
Male or female.
Male or female, because if you need encouragement, you don't deserve to be. You're not dedicated or motivated enough to succeed as a scientist.
So if that's true for male or female students, why does it seem to have an extraordinary impact on women?
These are great questions. And it's, first of all, the way women are still raised to need outside approval rather than to just be, you know, set your own value if you're a guy, bluff your way through, never admit you don't know anything. But also, it's not equal. All things are not equal. First of all, the society is discouraging women and minorities from seeing themselves as scientists, because, of course, all the images on popular media since the beginning of time have been of white men. And there's so many other ways that, you know, women are picking up these subtle messages. No one will date you if you're a scientist. You're not really good at this. So it's not equal. And then there have been studies that show that the professors who think they're treating everybody equally are, in fact, responding to emails from their white male students sooner in a more positive way, or they spend more time answering questions or asking them out for a beer or something. So it's not all equal. And so the idea that, A, that nobody should give encouragement, I think, is kind of nuts, but also that people think the playing field is equal and that they're not encouraging anyone and that the society somehow is treating everybody equal is also, to me, is not true.
Now, in fact, you went back to Yale, obviously, to in terms of researching this book and also talking to students today.
Right.
Young female science students. I mean, we have to have come quite a distance from what you experienced in the mid to late 70s. But as I hear you saying, it hasn't been far enough, even though there are more female faculty members. Are there more support systems in for students?
So some things have gotten better, but I was shocked at how little had really gotten better. So there may be two women in the room now, or three or four, but each woman, sort of most of those women, are still feeling what I felt inside. And the whole ethos of not encouraging people. But what really shocked me was the students I talked to who told me how they were still being treated in junior high and high school and even in college, of their teachers teasing them, their classmates. You know, so one friend said her daughter was told, "You're too pretty to be good in math," by her math teacher. And she was a really smart, good student. So, or three girls in a robotics club. This is very recent. These are girls who are still in high school. The club was preparing for a robotics competition, and the advisor told the three girls, "Well, you can prepare the refreshments." You know, so that's still going on, or that all these brilliant, attractive, really cool, hip young women who were majoring at Yale when I did the research a couple of years ago crowded around me and said, "Will anyone date us? Will anyone marry us? None of the boys want to go out with us because we're majoring in physics." And I just was floored that that was still what was going on, you know, in that was 2012 when I did those interviews.
Look, we still also, I mean, as you well know, we have this going on to a certain degree, even at the highest levels in the most, you know, vaunted labs. Was it just this year where Tim Hunt, the British Nobel Prize winner, said that, you know, women don't belong in the labs because they cry too much? I mean, he later said he was taken out of context, but I don't necessarily think that was the case. But, you know, we've just got about a minute to go here. I wanted to feel more hopeful.
I can give you some hope.
So give me some hope.
Well, first of all, everybody's talking about this. I think women, even there are a lot of well-meaning men, realize this is something we need to work on. I would say with people of color even more so. But so much of this is unconscious bias and remnant attitudes by people who actually do mean well and are not trying to keep women and minorities out. And when you make people aware of these implicit biases, these unconscious biases, it's not that hard to overcome them. There are actions you can take to kind of make sure things are fairer. And that's really my hope, the reason I wrote the book, so that people would, some of these sound like silly reasons, but once you know them and you think of them as silly, they lose some of their power.
Right. Well, even Larry Summers himself blurbed your book and helped it. I wanted to help get it published.
He's been actually very supportive of it.
Well, the book is The Only Woman in the Room, Why Science is Still a Boys' Club. It's by Eileen Pollack. Pleasure to talk with you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
And Eileen will be at the Harvard Bookstore tonight talking about The Only Woman in the Room, so check it out. There's more information at radioboston.org. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.